19. Kara was wakened at 4:30 the next morning by a thunderous noise overhead. At first a part of her dream, then it was not. She rushed to the door in time to see a medical helicopter hover into position to land just outside the compound walls. Who? Lorraine? Complications from surgery? But it had been nearly a week. Watkins? Throwing a robe over her pajamas, Kara rushed along the walkway and through the gate to Wing 2. EMTs wheeled an empty gurney through the courtyard toward Wing 3. Julian and James stood in the glare of extra-bright floodlights that Kara hadn't seen turned on before, James shivering in pajamas, Julian fully dressed. Kara grabbed Julian's arm. Who is it? Watkins? Lorraine? No, Aiden. Lyle called for an airlift to Grand Cayman. What symptoms? She felt herself shifting to professional mode. Blood in Aiden's feces, low blood pressure. I don't know what else. Lyle doesn't know what it could be, and there's no lab results yet. James said, it wasn't anything he ate from our kitchen. I went over everything last night, and I mean everything. No mold. Kara said, what else did Dr. Luskin say? No spoiled food. Just that the airlift to Grand Cayman is a precaution in case Aiden gets worse. No cross-contaminated utensils. My staff all know not to use the same knives on fruit and meat. Kara hadn't felt the night breeze. Now she did and pulled her robe closer. And all fresh produce is soaked and scrubbed for pesticides or unsafe handling that... It wasn't anything from the kitchens, James, Julian finally said, although probably just to shut James up. Because how could Julian know what had caused Aiden's illness if Luskin didn't know? Luskin would have taken a patient history if Aiden had been capable of supplying one. But you didn't airlift a patient 90-some miles without a serious situation. Julian added, Kara, go back inside. You can't do anything here and you're shivering. The surgery sequence is changed, but not the scheduling. You operate next on Ben instead of Aiden. His imaging is on file at the hospital. You can give him any pre-op instructions in the morning. Okay. But, Julian, even though this isn't the best time, I have to ask. Am I still chief surgeon after Dr. Abruzzo arrives, with him as my backup? Or is it the other way around? You're chief surgeon. Nothing has changed, Kara. Abruzzo understands the position he was hired for. Then why did he accept it? You'll have to ask him. Julian ran his hand through his hair. He looked distracted. And Kara had the impression, not for the first time, that there were aspects of this project she was not being told about. The medical chopper rose into the dark sky. Lorraine's multiverse experience did not go as expected. She bounced into the session room, looking not at all like someone who'd had brain surgery 5 days earlier, except for the blue paper hat covering her partially shaved skull. Lorraine had affixed to the hat a violently orange artificial flower. Kara was glad that at least it wasn't a real flower. Lorraine seemed to have no idea about sterile conditions near a surgical site. She wore extravagantly studded skinny jeans with a day-glow orange silk shirt and 3-inch-high silver sandals that showed off orange toenails. Hey, Jules! Kara! Everybody! I'm off to another world! Let's do it! Hold still, Rosita, the young nurse, said. I'm trying to get your vitals. Lorraine laughed. I'm very vital, honey. The room seemed crowded to Kara, thick with both people and tension. Julian and Barbara stood at the bank of computers. Kara and Dr. Weigert waited to one side, observers. And Kara didn't know which of them felt more anxious. The next half hour would test both his theory and her surgical skills. Had Kara been able to duplicate with enough precision the surgery that David Weeks had performed on Julian? Julian had experienced what Kara considered a lucid hallucination. Would Lorraine? And what was everybody, frozen as flies suspended in amber, waiting for? The door opened and Watkins was wheeled in by Camilla. The tension grew. Only Lorraine seemed impervious to the strain that prickled like heat rash. She plucked off the foolish little hat, lay back on the cot, and winked as she opened her blouse to expose a lacy lavender bra. Camilla attached wireless sensor patches to Lorraine's head and body. The medical monitor began beeping softly with readings for her heart rate, blood pressure, oxygenation, respiration rate, body temperature, and pressure on the brain. The technology was newer and better than Caro had used at Fairleigh Memorial. "Hey, I'm a bionic woman," Lorraine said, and wiggled her chest suggestively. "Better watch out, guys."
"Lie still, please," Rosita said.
Julian removed the tiny titanium case from over the connectors on Lorraine's skull. He hooked in the leads that tethered her to the computer and looked down at his sister as Rosita hovered nearby, alert for any change in Lorraine's vital signs.
"Ready, Lo?"
Julian said.
"You know it."
Julian did something at the computer, and Lorraine's face went blank. Her eyes remained open. Her heart beat and lungs breathed, but Lorraine Day was not there. To Caro, it felt different from a patient in a coma, different from a brain-dead patient whose organs were being preserved by machine. Lorraine's mind had not just shut down. It had vanished. It was like nothing Caro had seen in any medical ward, except for death itself. Julian's and Barbara's screens brightened with data. No one spoke. A moment later, another screen began to show the visuals flowing through Lorraine's brain as captured by the deep image reconstruction software. Her image sat up on the cot, although, as with Julian's recording, no one else was present, and Lorraine was not hooked up to any machinery. Her head was not shaved. She walked through the door and, as with Julian's recording, directly into the courtyard of Wing 2 with its familiar flower bed and circling walkways. Bright sun winked off the studs on her jeans. Caro recalled Julian's words. "For these initial efforts, the data we programmed to create the new branch of the multiverse kept it pretty much identical to this one, keeping it as simple as possible until we see how the algorithm works out." This time, the courtyard lacked Trevi Fountain. What hallucination would Lorraine erect there? If Julian was exuberant, Lorraine was maniacally extravagant. Caro expected Versailles, or the Alhambra, or Alibaba's cave. Caro did, however, remember what Weigert had said about the limits of alternate universes. Whatever consciousness created by collapsing the wave function, that creation must follow the rules of spatio-temporal causality. And as the wave function collapsed, so would the degrees of freedom recorded in memory as Lorraine observed her creation. If she created the Alhambra, it could not later be turned into Versailles. Nor could she erect something physically impossible to exist. So what would Lorraine create? She created nothing. Instead, she knelt by the one flower bed and touched a small yellow blossom with one finger, her hair falling forward to hide her face. After a moment, her shoulders began to shake, and then her entire body. Was she laughing? No. When she finally stood, holding the plucked flower, tears streamed off her cheeks and spotted her silk shirt. She raised her face to the sky and sobbed. No sound, but Caro could almost hear the sobs, and remained that way for the entire 15 minutes until the screen blanked and the session ended. Weigert said softly,
"What the bloody?"
Lorraine sat upright on the bed and began to cry. Julian sat beside her and put his arm around her shoulders, despite the wires still strung between her head and the computer.
"What is it, Lo? Are you all right?"
"Crying."
"Lorraine, you have to talk to me. Are you in pain? What is it?"
Her sobs slowed.
"Pain? No. No, Julian. It was
What? It was what?
Everything.
It took her another 5 minutes to recover. Except, Caro thought, she didn't recover the former Lorraine. Not really. Her gestures were not theatrical, her smile softer, her expression suffused with, what? Wonder. It was in her voice, her eyes, her words.
I came into the courtyard, Lorraine said, as on the screen the recording played. And all at once, I knew. I felt it.
That flower. She pointed to her image kneeling by the flower bed.
That flower was me. I wasn't separate from it, or from the ground under my feet, or the walls of the compound, or any of you. We were all melted together, all one. I can't explain, but I knew. I still know. All of it was me, and I was all of it, and I still am. Julian, I still am.
Caro lay, at 6 years old, seven, on a blanket in the back garden, watching clouds drift across the sky. Then, all at once, the clouds were no longer there, and neither was Caro. She was nowhere and everywhere, woven into what she later thought of as the fabric of the universe. She was the clouds, the grass, the breeze, the ant crawling across her arm. Everything was her, and she was everything. Julian said in a hushed, awed voice,
to see a world in a grain of sand, and a heaven in a wildflower. Hold infinity in the palm of your hand, and eternity in an hour. William Blake.
No, Caro said, more loudly than she'd intended. Lorraine merely had an episode of temporal lobe epilepsy. Barbara, I need to see her mapping data.
It wasn't epilepsy, Lorraine said.
If you'd experienced it, if you'd been there,
nothing like epilepsy.
She gazed directly at Caro, but it was a gaze, not a glare. Lorraine looked sure enough of her delusion to not need combat.
It was like everything in the universe is actually one.
Weigert spoke for the first time.
Well,
he said softly,
it is. Matter and energy and consciousness, all the same, inseparable.
Watkins said nothing. He wheeled his chair out the door, trailed by Camilla. Watkins scowled, as if bitterly disappointed. Why?